And so with your training in samadhi and developing mindfulness, that this hasn't progressed in 16 years, what that shows is that your mindfulness hasn't been consistent. And so when perhaps you're sitting in meditation and you have some degree of mindfulness, but when you leave that formal meditation, you also leave your mindfulness behind. And so whether you practice doing Zen practice or Theravada practice, what that is about is the cultivation of mindfulness and bringing the mind to have firm samadhi. But when mindfulness is not good, then you won't develop. Because mindfulness isn't there, peace won't arise, and then wisdom is absent. And so one of the great teachers gave a simile to it being like going fishing in a pond that has no fish. And no matter if you do that for many years, 16 years, 20 years, 30 years, you'll never catch any fish because the pond doesn't have any fish. And so you can try when you're meditating to be reciting a mantra, for instance, and to see, well, is your mind staying with that or not, or is it getting distracted? If it's distracted, then try to pull it back to be with that and try to make that consistent. And then look at each time you practice, so maybe over the space of an hour or half an hour, is your mindfulness with that object? And if it's just with it a small amount, then you won't have any peace and you won't be developing. All that will be happening is the mind will be following sensory experiences. So practicing meditation in the way of Zen, so this is the way of wisdom. And so for those who don't have wisdom, a very deep level of wisdom, it's hard for them to study it in a way that they understand it. And so previously, there's myself and other monks who had studied the way practices of Zen. It's Venerable Ajahn Chah, he said that Zen is for people who are mature already, for grown-ups, because it's very deep and profound. And if one is just a child and one's practice hasn't reached that level yet, then it's very difficult for them to understand the meaning of Zen, because this is, it's a very pure wisdom that they teach. And for one to be able to understand it, the mind needs to have well-established samadhi in order for that understanding to arise. And so Bodhidhamma, or the sixth patriarch, they had samadhi which was full already. And so it just took them just a small amount of knowledge, and then they could gain an understanding from that. So there's a story that I had read before, that one Zen master was teaching his disciple, and he had a Buddha image that was made out of wood. And so he took that image and was kind of scraping away at it. And his disciple asked him, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm trying to find relics." And so the disciple asked, "Well, how are you going to find relics in there?" But when he asked that, then there was knowledge, this clear knowing that came up with him. He could see all things as being empty. And so this is the kind of wisdom of Zen. But for those who don't have wisdom, it's difficult for them to penetrate that and understand it. Because it's only for people who are up to that point, who are ready for it, who are able to understand. So therefore, for the person who's asking this question, you've been practicing for 16 years, so maybe your Zen teacher has been teaching you in the way of wisdom, but your samadhi isn't yet firm enough to be able to gain a knowledge and understanding from that. So therefore you should carry on training until your barami, your spiritual virtues, are full, and then you will be able to understand. So to talk further about the practice of Zen, studying Zen, they call Zazen as sitting in meditation and being really sincere in doing that, really being intent on meditating in order to bring the mind to peace, being very focused on an object so that samadhi arises. And for the sake of entering into wisdom. And so this is one way of practicing Zen. And another way that they use in the Rinzai school of Zen is asking questions, what they call koans. And so this is means of practice that they use. And so the master will give a koan to his disciple, and then they reflect upon that until they're able to gain a clear knowledge from that by themselves. Or they can have an interview with their teacher, and their teacher asks them questions and they try to answer those questions. So there are many methods that the Zen master can use. Or just like the example that I gave before of this master who was trying to find these relics within a wooden image. And then the disciple wondered, well, how are you going to find them there because it's made out of wood? There aren't any relics inside there. And then from that, this wisdom and clear knowing was able to arise and able to destroy avijja, tanha, upadana, this ignorance, craving, and clinging. Well, there was another story where there was a Zen master called Huang Po, who was a great master in Mahayana. And he taught his disciple, and when he was teaching one of his disciples, he hit them with his walking stick on three occasions. And this disciple felt kind of discouraged and sad because of that, and thought that, well, my teacher's, I don't want to study with my teacher. So he took leave from his teacher. And thinking, you know, how it is that his teacher had hit him like this. But his teacher told him that the reason that he hit him was so that he wouldn't suffer anymore. That's why he hit him on three occasions. And then the disciple understood clearly that, you know, really humans should be moving away from greed, hatred, and delusion, trying to destroy that so that suffering disappears. We shouldn't be thinking in ways that increase our suffering. And so this wisdom arose within him. What this shows is that the Zen masters need to be very quick and intelligent so that they're able to understand their disciples and know how it is that they can teach their disciples so that they are able to attain. And so this is the way of wisdom.
The next question. Dear Longpo Anan, I noticed that there is a strong gossiping culture in my team. I felt uncomfortable about it, and I do not wish to join in their talks at times, as I am aware that gossip is not good. However, as they are my team members, it is hard not to gossip with them. May I seek your advice if I should leave my current job?
So the question asking about, so thinking of quitting one's job due to the gossiping culture there. So you should ask that if you leave your current job, will you be able to find another job? Will you still have other work to do? And if you don't, then things may well be more difficult than they were before. And if you don't have money, then things will be much harder. Or if you do find a new job, but in that new job, there are still people who are gossiping just like your old job. And you have to be with them, but you see that what they're doing isn't good. Then you'll need to leave that job, but then find another job. And then you just carry on doing this over and over again without stop. Because the people in this world are this way. So we see that in this world, there is praise and there is gossip. And this is something consistent in this world for it to be like this. So therefore, you should bring about right view in your heart, and this is better, to see how it's normal for this world to be this way. And that sometimes people gossip with us, sometimes people gossip about us. But to have that knowledge and the mindfulness to see that this isn't a good thing. And so there's no need to kind of run away from them. Just bring your mind into a balanced, centered place and carry on with your meditation. And so when people are gossiping like this, there's no need for you to gossip along with them. But you also have that just right, so that attitude, so that you don't become upset with what they're saying as well. So change your mind first. Have loving kindness in your mind, seeing how the reason that people gossip like this is because they have ignorance, which is conditioning their mind. And so have your mind established in loving kindness for both sides. And also that even though people are gossiping, it's still possible for you to be sitting with them. So like the people who are taking the precepts, but suppose there's other people who are drinking alcohol, well, it's still possible for them to sit with one another. And the one on the precepts, they can just have a drink of water or like a fizzy drink. But they can still talk with one another. And then the one keeping the precepts later on is able to drive those who have been drinking home. So there's benefit that can arise from that.
The next question. Dear Lompo Anan, may I ask the following questions? Recently, as I've started to attend Dharma talks and meditation retreats frequently, I started to lose interest in meeting my friends. I still do like meeting my friends, but I don't enjoy it as much as I did before. May I seek your advice on how to strike a balance in both areas? Second question, may I also ask, how do I overcome the fear of illnesses? Thank you, Lompo.
So to answer the first question, so that when we listen to the Dhamma, then it's normal that our life begins to change. And we don't have the same, don't find the same delight that we once did in the world. And rather there's this interest in the Dhamma that comes up, and we have this interest for the sake of developing knowledge, wisdom, and finding peace. So as we just carry on with our practice, that this is the path to understanding and to seeing the drawbacks in chaos, the drawbacks of not being peaceful, the drawbacks of finding delight in worldly things. And so it's, and this delight and hanging around with one's friends and finding fun in that. So this is very normal to be experiencing this. It's very normal. But it's also normal to get new friends as well, and friends whose views are similar to yours. And so even though there still is a sense of wanting to find fun and delight, it's not quite what it was before. And so you see that that's due to this change that's happening in your mind and this beginning to understand the Dhamma. So it's like the left and right hand disciples of the Buddha, Venerable Sariputta and Mahamoggallana, that before they ordained when they were lay people, that each year they would go to this annual festival and really delight in that, find a lot of fun in that. And each of them had 500 followers who would go with them as well. But when their barami really came up, was complete, they found a sense of boredom and weariness in that instead, because they saw how all of the people, so the people who were performing and the people who were watching, they all would have to die. And so there's a sense of dispassion, sobriety coming up in the heart. And so their wisdom came up for both of them. And instead of seeking out that fun, they sought out freedom instead and became arahants after having listened to the Dhamma of the Buddha. But for us, we haven't reached that point yet, so we need to get things in balance. And so you find some fun, and that's okay, in order to adjust your moods. And if you try to only be meditating, then that will be hard to do in the beginning. But eventually, as you practice and wisdom arises, then you'll see how everyone is destined for death. And for the second question, so overcoming a fear of illness, that for those who are training and practicing in meditation, the reason we do this is to overcome this fear. So even though there may be fear of sickness, fear of death, how much one experiences that is dependent upon what one has done in the past and the spiritual virtues that one has accumulated already. And so for those who have accumulated much of these, then they don't fear anything. But that depends upon the mindfulness and the wisdom that one has. So no matter what the case, one needs to be training frequently, to be meditating a lot, contemplating a lot, so that wisdom can arise. And when this does, then the amount of fear that we experience steadily reduces. But in the beginning, there may be this fear there. But don't worry about that, and just try to carry on training your mind.